and it's 6 past the hour on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition.
Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, anxious self-scrutinizers, latent haters, ironically detached people, engaged reactionaries and a-holes. Good morning, all of you. Nice to see you. How are you? I hope that my condescending tone is really getting under the skin of some of you. I love when that happens. I love when just the very nature of my existence makes you guys go, why? And then other people say, oh, he's so cute and mad. Why is he mad today? Because you know why I'm mad? I'm not even that mad, but I'm mad enough. I always have a current of anger running through me, Riley.
I know you do, but before you get into that, what is a self-scrutinizer?
A self-scrutinizer? I'm a self-scrutinizer. A self-scrutinizer is someone going, oh, man, am I fat? I think I'm fat.
Why did I say that?
You know, why did I do that?
That kind of self-scrutinizer.
Yeah, I want freedom from that. All right?
I want freedom from it.
Yes, I can. I can have self-acceptance. But this isn't about me. It's about this guy, Richard Miniter, this dude who I watch on Wolf Blitzer. He's a writer. He wrote a book called Shadow War, How Bush is Winning the War on Terror.
What, are you drunk?
No, dude, he's one of these Republican lackeys, and I'm sitting there watching him, and right away you know, because they're sort of doughy-faced, and you know that he hasn't had a free thought of his own in a long time.
A talking point punk.
Exactly, but he writes books, and obviously he's funded by books. You know, I went to Amazon to see who bought this book. The same people bought, you know, John O'Neill's book. The same people bought Ann Coulter's book. The same people bought Gertz's book. So this guy's on, and right away, just because of his, you know, sort of doughy, sold-out soul-looking face, you know, I'm already mad at him. You know what I mean? And then he starts going like, you know, I'm pretty sure that that Bin Laden is in Iran. That Bin Laden is in Iran. See, this is my theory, is that this is why they let this guy go, so he can show up anywhere. He's in China. Maybe we should go to China. So this guy's floating a trial balloon that just put out into the world that he thinks, based on the guy's robe, all right, and based on some, you know, the idea that maybe one of Bin Laden's kid was in Iran a couple of years ago, that Bin Laden is Iran, and I just saw it as one of those weird trial balloons that goes out into the zeitgeist to say that, like, maybe, you know, we can validate or find reason to go into Iran.
I don't understand. Is this guy like a Middle Eastern robe expert? Is that what he's promoting himself as?
Well, that's what he's sort of deconstructing. Wolf Blitzer, who at times you almost think he's going to do something.
Nah.
He almost gets right up to the edge of actually doing something that a reporter should be doing, and then he doesn't do it. You know, he's like, well, we don't have any evidence of this. We've checked all our sources. We've gone through all of our, Pentagon sources. There's no one but you, basically, that's saying that Bin Laden might be in Iran.
Doesn't mean it's not true, you understand.
No, I know
that. It's only you.
Yeah, but that guy's like, well, I've got sources. Then they've all got secret sources, and it's all crap. You know, it's just all crap, and I found myself seething because this, on top of the psychological operations story that we have, you know, just makes me really wonder. It's not even in nature of, you know, whose side the media is on. They're just soulless. They're gutless, and they just let themselves be bought out.
Follow the money. The media follows the money. The media, any story that they think they can carry for more than one news cycle, they will carry because it's money.
But this wasn't even a news story. This was just filler. This was a guy, you know, we know, you know, when you book a show, even like this, you know, eventually you find that, you know, when you get right down to it, there's like not a huge number of guests that have the chops or have the goods to be on the show, and you find out as you go along.
Yeah, well, not that many can withstand self-scrutiny.
But then, when I hear about this psychological psyops on the military, that the military dropped a story to CNN and to other news outlets three weeks before they were planning to go into Fallujah, that they were going into Fallujah just to get the news out there to see, you know, what the insurgency would do, that they used the news media to do that. I'm sure this kind of stuff has been going on for years, but they're shameless about it, and they say that it was the right thing to do, and they're not afraid to use the media. So I think the media allows itself to be used and doesn't scrutinize itself at all, and then, you know, it doesn't even, how are they going to report on that?
Well, see, Mark, you got to understand something. Fallujah, for the media, for these 24-hour cable news outlets, Fallujah is money in the bank. If they had invaded Fallujah, then they'd have been able to, you know, put up big graphics, Fallujah, invasion, day number one.
Yeah.
And they would have been able to sell everything from soap to baldness remedies by, you know, following the Fallujah invasion. The military people, finally, after all these years, are starting to understand how you can use the fact that these people have to fill time. So they decided, well, okay, we want to find out out how these insurgents are going to operate. Why not plant a story? They'll do it.
But
they'll
when those, right, okay, so they'll run it. But do they put, like, in the press release from the military, does it say, yeah, you know, this story, please do not design graphics yet?
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Please do not create theme music for the Fallujah,
for the Fallujah invasion. Yeah, right?
And then they're like, oh, it's one of those stories. Okay, we dig, man. We're on board. So they are pawns of the military propaganda.
They're pawns of the military because they think they can make a profit from it. And look, we live in a capitalist society.
Mm-hmm.
These people have 24 hours a day, except for the Larry King reruns, of course, 7 days a week that they have to fill this time with something.
I just found myself, I get excited when I start to seethe a little bit, but I started to recognize certain things that, for this to go out into the ether, to this idea that bin Laden is in Iran, you know, that there's, you know, the sort of the seeds of justification, you know, a collective justification to maybe invade Iran, which, you know, they clearly don't have the manpower to do, nor do they have the support to do it, but that doesn't seem to matter. There's speculation that they're just going to let Israel do it and go, oh, okay.
Oh, you did it, okay. Well, it's not a great thing, but hey,
it got me sort of worked up because I believe that bin Laden and al-Ziri are actually in a cell in the basement of the White House, right next to a studio that doesn't look unlike the studio in Videodrome. Did you ever see that movie?
Now, yeah. I got an idea.
Yeah.
Why don't we take that story
mm-hmm.
on the road? Why not do like a This Is Spinal Tap sort of thing? You and I will get together, mm-hmm. we'll go on these different networks, and we'll promote the idea that bin Laden is hiding somewhere in Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
And we have sources that can confirm this.
Yeah.
And see how far we get with it. You know?
Why not? Just as a publicity stunt?
Sure.
I think he might be in Queens. I live in Queens. And
everybody at one time or another seems... I mean, Queens is the most diverse county in America.
I know. That's why I love it.
It is an incredible place. Any language that is spoken on the planet Earth is spoken in Queens.
Well, that's the weird thing is when I'm walking down the street with my stupid problems, my stupid self-scrutinizing, selfish problems about, you know, like, hey, I'm sitting there going, I can't believe my cat peed on my new comforter, that, you know, you can pretty much guarantee that there might be a guy walking towards you thinking, like, my entire family was killed in the Ukraine.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So there's a balance there that, you know, anyone who comes to this country from other situations are carrying a bigger burden than me and my stupid cats.
Well, a lot of people that live here in the United States are carrying a huge burden. You know, when I was in D.C. the other week, it's an incredible contrast to have this huge, brand-new World Bank building and, like, five homeless guys sitting in a park right next to it, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, the contrast is amazing.
The irony.
The irony.
Is that
the
irony?
Fact that there's so little, you know, there's really so little concern. Everybody walks past the homeless now. I mean, it's not like it was when I guess homelessness, other than the Depression, was new. And you used to see people that were all bundled up like that. And then when the homeless population in New York, for example, got really large, you couldn't really ignore the homeless because they were everywhere, on the train, everything. Lately, I think over the last couple, 4 years, it really has, the homeless really isn't a big problem to anyone anymore. Oh, well, they're homeless. Well, there they are.
Well, you have to create a personal policy around the homeless. Do you give money to everybody? Do you do it by, you know, depending on your mood?
Mm-hmm.
My wife has a policy where she gives money to everybody. My buddy Louie has a policy where he gives money to everybody who asks. They feel that I think a karmically...
Yeah, I used to do that. And I used to have no money, but I would still give money.
And sometimes I draw the line at crackheads, you know, just because I'm like, you know, do I feel... Some days I'm like, sure, go ahead, have a good time, kill yourself. Other times, I'm feeling a little high-handed, high and mighty, and I'm like, no, I'm not going to give you money for drugs.
Well, I try not to give them enough to go out and cop on their own. You know what I'm saying? I try not to give them, like...
You just give them a little so they have to make a day of it?
Well,
you're like, you know... You go,
so I don't feel personally responsible for having to go to some dealer to get crack.
You still got
to
wait another 50 or 60 quarters to get your fix. Good luck
there
with
you
that.
Go.
Everyone's got... You're
have
basically,
a nice day.
You basically have some sort of weird work ethic around giving drug addicts money. It's like, I'm not going to make this too easy for you. You're going to put in a hard day's work before you get your crack.
Either that, or you have to go to your dealer and beg to get the stuff on the eye, which... Very few crack dealers actually do.
Thank God Kayla's back on the board.
Yes,
not that Tim was doing a bad job.
Tim was cool.
It was a little quiet.
He's out here in the ether somewhere.
Yeah, Tim was sort of like, you know, I got nervous. I put him on the mic. He almost disappeared on the mic.
Oh, no.
out there.
Well, no, he just sort of like, he didn't expect it. And, you know, his mother is a librarian. So I guess he had a life of like, because he talks like that. I'm like, hey, Tim, so what's going on? He's like, what? Yeah, all right, no, that's good. That's
He's probably listening to us now plotting
nice
our
guy.
Doom.
Did a great job.
He did do a great
job. No, but it wasn't the Kalo multimedia extravaganza over there in the corner.
Kalo got a multimedia extravaganza from Paris, man.
So what's it, well, you got a Paris story for us after the break?
Yes, I do.
Okay,
right.
We'll be back at 16 past the hour, Air America Mornings Edition. We're going to talk to Kalo about Paris after this.
MorningsEdition.com. Our guests, our comedy, your blog. MorningsEdition.com. Courtesy of Air America Radio.
Past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Yes.
It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. A couple announcements. Next Friday, the 10th of December, Morning Sedition will be in Boston, in Somerville to be exact, in Davis Square to even be more exact, at the Someday Cafe to be as exact as I can. Can't tell you what table we'll be sitting at. Our guests are going to be Jimmy Kingle, a comedian who he's got theater up there, very funny. I think Barry Crimmins is going to stop by. We're all doing the same show that Friday night at the Off-Broadway Theater in Davis Square there. Ted Leo, who's a great musician, singer-songwriter, but also, as I said yesterday, I worked with him at Southpaw in Brooklyn at a Carrie event, and he just him and electric guitar and Today's Tom Sawyer by Rush, which is no small task.
Ooh.
All right? No small, and he rocked. It wasn't just sort of like, I'm going to do an acoustic slowed down interpretation of this. He put it out there. All right, I will be in Seattle tomorrow and Saturday at Giggles. You can go to giggles comedy club.com for information. Hopefully I'll be recording a CD. We will be recording it, but depending on how much cursing there is on it. Oh, no, no problem.
You're going to have a parental advisory sticker on it?
I don't know. You know, it's like, generally, I sell them from my website. So I just got a record deal with a guy who does, he's got his own record company, Stand Up Records, and he's going to remix and reproduce my first CD that you can get at markmaron.com, which was taped shortly after 9/11, Full of the Fury, and this one, you know, which I'm going to do. And, I cut a deal with him. He's going to package and do whatever he's going to do. I'm going to wash my hands of it. I'm just going to do the good show, hopefully.
Cool.
Hopefully, you know, I don't melt down, but sometimes even that is a good show. what else? You know, on Saturday, this Saturday, December 4th at 1 p.m. at the Ohio State House in Columbus, Ohio, there will be a Fight for Democracy rally to ensure that every vote is counted. You can go to the links at morningsedition.com for details. There's also other information about voter fraud. And contrary to what some people believe, I never call people who are investigating voter fraud conspiracy theorists. That is some sort of weird fallacy, rumor, gossip myth that is bouncing around out there in the limited world of our blog. You know, all I was trying to say was conspiracy theorists who are no different than Christians after a certain point in their marginal and limited way of understanding reality. I'm not saying all Christians. I'm talking about the worst kind. You know, this is where the left meets the right. You know, if you are committed on a spiritual or emotional level to unprovable events and symbols to justify your own life and define your point of view and supply a perpetual rationalization and cop-out for your existential predicament, you are no different than they are. I never called the people that are into voter fraud and into investigating that conspiracy theorists. It's something that you want to get angry at. It's not something I said. I was just talking about conspiracy in general. And if this becomes that, which it may, who could say? You know, it's not for me to judge, and you won't be able to judge. I hope to God that we get to the bottom of this and that the electoral system is changed and federalized and made as fair as possible. I don't have a lot of faith that it will ever be fair. I just don't. So, you know, if you have a problem with that, you know, I don't care. But, you know, I am certainly not against the process, my friends.
Wait a minute. Did I just hear you say you hope to God?
Yeah.
I thought you didn't believe in God.
It's a phrase. What do you call it? A particle of speech, a phrase. What do you call those? It's a way of speaking. It's like when I say, Jesus Christ, I hurt my foot.
Oh,
I'm not
okay.
Actually asking Jesus for help. But, you know, moving on. I just want to clear that up because if you listen to the old shows, I never called anybody a conspiracy theorist. I've certainly been one before. I know what it feels like to be one. But I don't think that this investigation into fraud is a conspiracy theory. I don't think that. And I really hope that we get to the bottom of it. Well, let's hope if that's too sarcastic in tone for you, let me switch it up a little bit. Man, I really hope we get to the bottom of this because, you know, our democracy depends on people getting engaged on this level and, you know, and looking into this and really, you know, doing everything we can to change this system so it functions, you know, for the benefit of the democracy, so democracy can be real again. You know what I'm saying? Hold on a minute.
Are you okay?
No, I don't know.
Are you all right?
I don't know.
You sure?
I'm just condescending.
Oh, okay.
You know, you get upset with me right now.
Kalo!
What's up? Dude. What's going on, man?
Nothing much. It's great to be back.
So, I'm more than happy to have you back.
Thank you.
I got nothing against Tim. I like Tim, but, you know, you when you come down here, we kind of expect the place. You know, usually when you come down and Kalo's in the studio, you got the disco ball going. there's music pounding. We're talking, you know, the boy talk off the air, mm-hmm. and you're back.
Yes.
So you were in Paris with your lovely girl.
Yes, my girlfriend.
And what did you see? Give us some highlights quickly. Not quickly. You have 3 hours.
So Mona Lisa, saw everything. Okay. Notre Dame, went to the Louvre. Actually, went to one place I didn't expect to go to, actually.
Where?
Well, let me just say, I booked a tour before I went, and you know, my tour guy came, and we were on the little minibus, and we picked up someone else, and I thought we were going to just see all the sites, you know, all the monuments.
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah, so we're heading out of Paris now. I was like, what? where are we going? He's like, oh, we're just going to Versailles or whatever.
Oh, Versailles?
Yeah, Versailles, excuse me.
Wow.
And so, yeah, we spent the day at this castle, and I didn't realize that I was going to a castle that day.
Was it pretty amazing?
It was awesome.
I didn't get to Versailles when I was there. I wasn't there long enough.
Is this where they signed that treaty? Is that the castle you're talking about?
It's where Louis the 14th, 15th, and 16th lived.
But they did sign the treaty there
as well.
The
treaty of Versailles after World War One.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and they wanted a nice setting, I guess. There's probably a better reason.
Pretty place.
Because of my lack of education in the history department, I'm going to say they had a very nice table out there for signing. And they had an antique blotter, a Louis the blotter, that, you know, an ink, and they used the pens that Louis the Hennigan had used. Am I right?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, there it is.
So the Mona Lisa, you saw her in her plexiglass cage?
Dude, it was so small.
I know.
It's unbelievably
small. It's hard for it to live up to what it's supposed to. And there usually were there hundreds of people around it?
Amazing. Just so many people, you know, taking pictures.
Oh, is it time to go? Is that what the music means?
Yeah.
Oh. So we'll be back with the Peanut Diaries, P.W. McDonald, and some news and some talking points. And, for you know, we want to give you the news that you missed while you were sleeping. Right,
Mark
Riley?
And the liberal agenda when we come back here on Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Before past the hour, Mark Maron with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
We're on Morning Sedition here on Air America Radio. Ramon is back.
Yes.
He's back wearing fatigues. He's got the camo face on. He had, like, he looked like, I don't know where he's been, but he looked like he was, you know, he'd seen some, you know what I mean?
And he's back to Ramon now. He said, call me Ramon.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. It's unbelievable how things change and how long we've committed to this bit. like, it keeps growing. You know what I mean? It's not like, you know, there's not people out there like, you know, I mean, I wonder if Ramon's going to come today. But you never know. Honestly, out there in the world of listeners to radio, I'm sure, like, if we didn't do it for a couple of days, someone would say, is Ramon okay? We get these emails.
Has he been hurt?
Yeah, I heard that he was in a fight and he was sending other people. I'm concerned. And where is the peanut fella? All right, here we go. This is Donald Rumsfeld's schedule from Donald Rumsfeld's Palm Pilot that Ramon brought today. 8 a.m. Wake up. Go to phone book. Send every 19-year-old from A to F to Iraq and tell G through L not to take any long vacations. 10 a.m. Get together with Tom Ridge before he leaves. To gain maximum support for this war, let's have Al-Qaeda attack the Oscars. There you go. 11 a.m. Call lawyer. Discuss strategy for German lawsuit accusing me of war crimes in Iraq. Our defense? The suit has no merit because it's not a war. It's a liberation. How many times do we have to go over this? 12 noon, to lure Iraqi insurgents to a central location, organize huge guns for PlayStation exchange.
Oh,
yeah. 1 p.m., supervise Army recruiting cartoon for grade school kids featuring the hilarious adventures of Shock and Awe. 2 p.m., fire all hot... 2 p.m., fire all high-level Latino as staffers. That way, Bush has no one to replace me with.
Oh,
3 p.m., call local recruiters, have them promise recruits that if they sign up for 3 more months, they get the uncut Abu Ghraib DVD with more than 5 hours of special features. 10 p.m., fall asleep to relaxing white noise machine. Choose setting. 1, Siege of Baghdad. 2, The Taking of Fallujah. Or 3, the classic, Rolling into Kuwait. There you go. Say, wait a minute. You know what time it is? Riley, do you know what time it is?
No, man. What time is it?
It's peanut butter jelly time. Peanut butter jelly time.
Oh.
Peanut butter jelly time. This is crazy. I can hear the reactionaries out there going,
what is this? What are we doing? Where's the news? Why don't they talk about the issues already? I don't care.
It's been about 2 months since our associate producer, Brendan P.W. McDonald, was freed from a lifelong allergy to peanuts. We've been checking in with him week to week to see how well he's been integrated into the world of peanuts. He may not always like what he finds, but he's never lacking another entry in the Peanut Diaries.
Hey, guys.
What do we got?
Well, first, you know, there's listeners out there, Mark, that I'm sure want to hear this because they sent in recipes. Look at all these. You see these? These are listener recipes for peanut dishes, and I actually did a little experimentation.
Yeah.
So Virginia will be pleased to know that she told me that I haven't lived until I had unsweetened deli peanut butter on whole wheat bread.
Huh.
And so I've lived now because I actually went out and had it. And she told me put a little honey on it.
Uh-huh.
So I did that. And it was good. I think promising eternal salvation is a little much, but it was good.
It was good.
Yeah. I do like it when you shovel out refined sugar in, like, the Skippy and stuff, though. Like, that's what I think makes the peanut butter good.
Yeah, I've had the uncut peanut butter before. It tastes, it's a little, like, you're kind of waiting for a little ding.
The honey helped.
Oh, so, but that's a very healthy way to go about it.
Sure.
She sounds like, and I don't want to judge or project, but that's sort of the vegetarian's approach to how to enjoy peanuts.
I guess, or just somebody who, had a chemistry set when they were a kid, and were like, I'm going to put some honey in. I also got a great recipe that I haven't tried, but I'm dying to. I just have the time to do it for Thai peanut sauce, because last time I told you how
much
I love
it. You got a recipe for that?
Yeah.
I need a copy of that.
And also, a person on the blog posted that.
I'm getting fat just listening to this.
Well, how about this? Peanut butter and jelly.
Larson's getting fat in the booth. And he's at Weight Watchers. You can't even listen to this stuff.
He's not.
I got to go in that booth afterwards. There's going to be less room for me.
Wouldn't it be sad if a guy, if you just heard about desserts, that you actually got fatter? There's some guy that had some weird syndrome. And, if Larson, every time he mentioned peanuts, just got so big that he was pressing up against the glass of the booth. I'm sorry. I digress.
That's fine. And it's thanks to listeners who are keeping us with the steady weight gain. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
And I also appreciate all the peanut gifts I got over the holidays.
Oh.
It was my birthday also over the weekend.
Happy birthday, guys.
Happy birthday.
And people, here, guys, pass them around. There's some honey roast peanuts and some Nutter Butters.
Give me them honey roasts.
All right.
And so, that was part of the birthday smorgasbord. I got a whole bunch of peanut related treats, and I would be remiss if I didn't mention that after I had mentioned the Peanut Diaries, my future father-in-law, he went out to the store and he bought me a whole jar of good dry roasted peanuts and the famed Ben and Jerry's peanut butter cup.
Dude, that is it, right?
Well, and then
was that crazy or what?
My fiance called him out on it. She's like, Dad, you just got this for him so you could get on the radio, right? And he copped to it. He said, yeah, that was why. But you're right. They were good because that was kind of why I wanted to talk to you guys today, because I didn't know how to deal with the fact that I didn't like the Reese's peanut butter cups.
Yes.
And that was the first.
You were having a hard time sleeping, and I said, why? Why don't I like them?
They're so popular. People were ridiculing me. They were like, you haven't had peanuts your whole life, and you don't like the Reese's cups? What's wrong with you? So the first time I had them, too, it was very ritualistic. I went out and bought them. They were the first candy that I had.
Did you sort of look at the package?
I didn't just look at it. I set it as like a place on the table. I didn't do it in front of the television. I kind of turned off all multimedia because I didn't want any external. And this was a big moment. This
put
was,
on headset,
you know,
like the sort of like no sound headphones.
Right. Candy peanut virginity was being broken here. This was after years of abstinence only treatment with the peanut.
Which we know doesn't work.
Right.
Absolutely,
well, it doesn't.
Yeah.
And I was ready to break it. And it was just not satisfying. I had a glass of milk with me, too, to wash everything down, and I just...
They didn't give it to you.
Well, it was just kind of that peanut cream, not butter, and it was a little dusty.
Mm.
But I have to say, redemption was found in that Ben & Jerry's ice cream.
That stuff.
You have to go in small doses. It's very... Like, you can't just scoop the entire scoop out with... like a full amount of the peanut butter cups.
How great is it when you find like an almost whole peanut butter cup in there?
There's a lot of them, too. I couldn't believe that. They actually keep like whole chunks of peanut butter cup in there.
Oh, man, peanut butter cup ice cream has got me through some tough times.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, really. It stopped me from crying and killing myself many a time.
Well, now that they've enlarged the pint a little bit.
Did you find one? I can't find it in my neighborhood.
Yeah, I think it's a suburbs thing because I was out in New Jersey and there was a whole lot of
we talked to Ben Cohen about that. He said that my suggesting that had nothing to do with it. It's probably better, that they don't have it in my neighborhood. There's nothing worse than being able to justify eating a half gallon of ice cream just because it's the same size container, just a little bigger. Just a little bigger for tomorrow.
How much bigger is it?
It's not a full, like, half a pint large. It's just maybe, like, 10% more.
Oh, so you know what's going to happen, I fear, Brendan,
what?
Is that you're actually going to hit a wall, and you're not going to be allergy. Well, exactly. You're going to be one of those people who's like, don't even talk about peanuts.
Yeah. Well, I do think that this has shown me a way to be tolerant of everything, even the people who say, you need to like the peanut butter cups.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, but I respect you liking them. You
yeah.
I don't have to like them.
Oh, man, I've got to learn that lesson with our listeners.
you can think about it for another 2 weeks because, as you know, I won't be here next week. You have to skip the week, a week of the peanut diaries. I'm going to be on vacation.
Oh, I thought you were going to be in, like, deep research.
No.
Like, I'm just going to go into a bunker with a lot of peanut products.
I will do some research while I'm away.
Where are you going? Atlanta? Georgia. Georgia, that's where all the peanuts in the world come from.
Peanuts. Actually, I think if I tell you guys this, I need some liberal confessional music here. This is a confession, guys.
Okay.
I have, you know, this 1 week on vacation a year, and I'm going to Florida, which is not necessarily the worst thing. Not nearly as cultured as Kalo's trip to Paris.
Right.
But I'm going there because my family and I are going to Disney World.
Oh!
Wow.
Yeah.
Really? What should be his penance for this grievous sin?
I can't help it. I love that damn place. I love everything about it. Everything, the way they design the snow peas in your salad, it's the greatest place I've ever seen.
Snow peas in
To the T, everything is prefabricated.
I think his penance is going to have to be to ride the cyclone in Coney Island 8 times when I come back.
And just get beaten by it.
Well,
I will have to say, though, I was a little relieved to go to that website, choosetheblue.com, and see that Disney donates a majority of their money to Democrats.
Oh, yeah? So
really?
Well, by the way, let's tell our listeners to go there. ChooseTheBlue.com. It's this great website where you can see what major corporations are donating, whether to Democrats or Republicans. It's so addictive. You'll just sit on it for hours figuring out.
Sadly, the only fast food Democrats can eat is Arby's.
Yeah.
So,
Sonic Drive-In,
Where do you go to? Where are they anymore?
I'm sure our listeners will tell us because there is a lot in the Midwest.
Sonic Drive-In and Arby's are the ones that give a lot of money to Democrats.
Arby's is a
great website.
ChooseTheBlue.com. We'll put that up on the site.
Yeah, and just there's also, one other one that I'll dig up because it's an effective way to boycott, certainly during the Christmas season and just in life. But it's incredible just how many food companies and car companies. Well, there's only one real car company, which is GM.
Right.
And all the food companies, all of them almost, fast food companies, all give to Republicans.
Well, you really understand why it's a red country, because the money is controlling all of it. You know?
Right.
It's
not the people.
Right. It's depressing. But go to that website and you'll find yourself mired in the conspiracy of it all.
Yeah, the real conspiracy. Yeah. So thank you, Brendan. Thank you for the disposition
of
peanut butter.
As always,
peanuts. We'll be back with some news after this. It's 45 past the hour on Air America Radio.
Hello, this is Mick Foley, professional wrestler and best-selling author, and you're listening to the two guys who give the right wing the smackdown. It's Mark Maron and Mark Riley with Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Past the hour. Man, I just want to listen to that whole song.
I don't even know what it is.
Who picked that one? That must be PW.
Uh-oh.
Who is it? I can't hear you.
Blues Traveler.
Oh, Blues Traveler?
Blues Traveler,
really?
Yeah.
Wow. I usually, I don't love them, but that was pretty good. It's weird when you listen to songs in fragments how great they are. It's 51. Did I say that? I did. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley. I almost said I'm Mark Riley, and that would be weird. But now let's talk some news. This is coming out last night, I guess. Leaders of the Civil Rights Watchdog take a hit. They take a shot at George Bush, a few of them.
The U.S. Civil Rights Commission, yes. Chair we spoke to, Mary Frances Berry, some time ago, and she told us about the draft of this very same report.
She was great.
Coming out. Yeah, she was very good. Well, Mary Frances Berry and the vice chairperson, Cruz Reynoso, delivered this report, 166 pages. They brought it to the White House. They harshly criticized the Bush administration for setting back race relations and failing to promote civil rights in any meaningful way. Now, here's the problem. Four members of the commission are Republicans.
Mm-hmm.
They refuse to sign on to this very same 166-page report.
Can't poop where you eat.
No. And, of course, the U.S. Civil Rights Commission does not have any real teeth in terms of implementing anything
right.
that comes out of this.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, you know, the Bush people, this is kind of easy stuff for them to counter because, oh, wait a minute, we got Condoleezza Rice over here, we got Colin Powell over here,
and we got
Gutierrez over here at Commerce, and we got Gonzalez over here.
And then we got, about it.
Well, Elaine Chao, I think the woman's name was.
Sure.
So the Bush people are going to say, well, hey, this is all partisan, which, of course, one of the four commissioners who voted against it said it was politically slanted based on shoddy research and faulty analysis. Now, remember that when this same commission did an analysis of the 2000 election and the allegations of voter fraud, the same people on the commission were jumping up and saying, oh, no, there was nobody that testified to that. And we asked Mary Frances Berry about that, and she told us, yes, there were people who testified to being physically disenfranchised, to being stopped by the police in North Florida, to be, having police checkpoints, to having people ask you for all kinds of documentation before you can
vote. Thank God they changed that for this election and just put one polling machine in a neighborhood of 50,000 people who just happen to be black.
Yeah, in all of North Florida. They just seem to, one here. It's an amazing situation. Now, the interesting thing is that Bush is just probably not going to comment much on this. He's got two new appointments to the Civil Rights Commission. And my guess is, because I believe the chairperson, Mary Frances Berry and Cruz Reynoso, may be the ones on their way out, he will have an appointee in charge.
Hmm.
And this would be seen as the last gasp of this particular Civil Rights Commission. Now, what's interesting is Mary Frances Berry is not a Democrat. She's an independent.
Right.
They make it. Now, Cruz Reynoso is a Democrat, but Mary Frances Berry, when she agrees with something the administration does, then she's standing up and she's an independent.
Mm-hmm.
When she disagrees, she's politically slanting things.
Right.
It's an amazing, amazing thing. But the commission was formed to investigate civil rights complaints, but it has no enforcement powers. Four members are appointed by the White House. And, of course, there are four Republicans, so guess who appointed them? And four by Congress.
Well, but let's go over some of the stuff that's in the report. I mean, they definitely, they take down the myth of faith-based initiatives as being, using language in the faith-based initiatives such as remove barriers, equal access, and equal treatment, which convey that such programs have civil rights relevance. In reality, the program does not remove barriers to discrimination. On the contrary, it allows religious organizations that receive public funds to discriminate against individuals based on religion in employment.
Yeah, well, what they're saying, essentially, what the Bush people are trying to say is that they are trying to remove barriers to religion. Right. I mean, that's essentially what they're saying, and that's what they're trying to do.
And also encourage, you know, religious institutions to carry some of the weight for, you know, helping the poor, educating people, you know, taking responsibility on social and local levels, as opposed to, you know, actually putting money into programs that could really help people. They're giving it, but they're also slanting a lot of this money. Is not going to Jewish organizations. It's not going to Muslim organizations.
None.
It's specifically going to churches that toe the party line, which has caused a lot of problem in terms of whether or not those churches should maintain their tax exempt status. You know, Barry Lynn's going to be in next week. You know, we'll get into detail with that with him. But they also talk about affirmative action, saying that the president has absolutely no stance on it whatsoever. He's gone two ways. He's tried to meet the middle and has nothing really.
I think the administration may have filed a friend of the court brief on behalf of the white suits who were suing in the University of Michigan case.
Mm-hmm.
But then on the other hand, he talks a good game about wanting to open up things. And see, the interesting thing about George W. Bush is, a lot of people don't think that he bears any personal racism or prejudice against people of color.
Right.
But yet his policies, if you look, you know, closely at the way his policies work, they do have a disparate impact on people of color.
Yeah, well, I think that, you know, what I said the other day, I think is true, is that true Republicans, or these guys, these neoconservatives, definitely believe in evolutionary theory, in the theory of evolution, because they really expect the underprivileged to adapt to whatever crap they put them through.
Yeah, absolutely. And, of course, you know, one of the things that the report points out in area after area after area
mm-hmm.
is the crucial underfunding of many of the president's initiatives with regard to civil rights.
Like the home of your own?
Yeah.
You're taking the money, the resources away from rent assistance for the poor towards, you know, the purchasing
home ownership,
program.
Yeah.
But it was underfunded and didn't really function.
Yeah, I mean, it's a laudable goal. And ironically enough, under Bill Clinton, more blacks bought houses than at any other time in American history.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now, I don't know what Bush has done on that level. And by the way, Clinton didn't actually have a home of your own program.
Right.
That's just the way things turned out. As the economy got better, people were able to go ahead and purchase homes. Most people don't want to rent forever, you know.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, you can't. You start to feel like you're just throwing your money away. There we go. That's the liberal agenda from the Streisand compound. Here's your marching orders for today. Write these down. One, encourage sending more troops to Iraq, but only if Bush's old National Guard unit has to go first. Two, point out the fact that based on the last census, at least two of Ocean's 12 are gay. Three, organize new Woodstock festival for baby boomers to celebrate 3 days of peace, love, and comparing individual retirement accounts. Four, counter funding for more abstinence-only education. Education by telling kids horror stories about being backed up.
Wow.
Five, today's phrase, just drop it into conversation. You know why we haven't heard from Cheney? Because he's dead, man. He died the last time he went into the hospital. No one's running this circus, man. No one. Wake up, people.
In our next hour, we're going to talk about Iraq. We're going to talk about abstinence. Planet Bush is coming up with Lawton Smalls
and Bill Frist.
And Bill Frist.
Let's talk about Frist.
Yeah. Invest that money. Invest that money. This is Air America Radio.
Mark Maron, you're listening to Air America Radio at 6 past the hour, and this is Morning Sedition.
Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, anxious self-scrutinizers, latent haters, ironically detached losers, engaged reactionaries, and of course, all you a-holes out there, welcome to you too. Aww. Is that my cat peeing on my new comforter, Mark Riley?
No, not again.
Is that my cat peeing on
not
my new
again.
Comforter? The saga of the cats continues. I think I'm going to give one to the Yemeni guy across the street for his deli protection. I call him a Yemeni because I know he's from Yemen. This guy is like one of the great entrepreneurs of Yemen.
He's really?
He's unbelievable. Apparently the dude, and I hear this secondhand from the woman who lives downstairs from me.
Uh-oh. Wait a minute, not the one that spews the racial hatred all night.
No, apparently that woman has Tourette's.
Oh,
I think someone emailed when I talked about her yelling in her room. I mean, this woman is this little old lady. She's about 100. Sweetest woman. Every time I see her, she's like, "Hi, how are you, Mark? It's so nice to see you." And you walk down this hall at the right time of day. "Oh, you black bastard, I could have been there." Yeah, I can't, and I'm going easy, Riley. We're talking graphic sexual stuff.
Really?
We're talking real racial, and
racism.
Well, it's pure and simple. It's racism, but it's buried.
Wait a minute, she's not in there talking to anybody,
and she might be ill. I mean, I thought it might be she's drunk or something, but I think she's just in there. Apparently, it is not unusual for Tourette's syndrome patients to do that.
But no, it's not unusual, but why only at night?
It's not at night. It's during the day.
So
I mean, I have similar symptoms sometimes with Clutch Larson in the morning. But I don't think mine is Tourette's. Mine's just too much coffee. You know, but the cats, anyways, you know, I go on with the cats because a lot of people enjoy the cat story. So I think, I didn't know who did it, but I just bought this beautiful new comforter down at Century 21, put the duvet cover on it, laid it out, and like I'm getting ready, I'm these hours kill me. I'm exhausted. I'm trying to get everything together. And yesterday, the day before yesterday?
Tuesday.
Just like, and it happened right, like, I must have left the room for 2 seconds, and you just can't help but take it personally. Like, you know what, did you just get on there to spite me? Is there something you don't like about this comforter? And then I tried to reprimand this cat, because I know it was Monkey, because he's the one that likes to pee on things. And I forget they're wild animals, so I picked the cat up, and I'm about to show him what he did, and not hit him, but at least say, that's no good. And then he takes a swipe at me.
Oh,
you
yeah.
know, I'm living with wild animals, all right? All right, well, anyway, so I'm going to give one to the Yemeni guy who apparently owns a tire business in Yemen and several other businesses throughout his family and his tribe.
Mm.
And think about that, a tire business in the desert. Genius.
Well, yeah.
People got to burn through tires all the time. So I was watching, I talked about that guy, though. I was watching Bush the other night from Canada, cracking jokes with the arrogance. It's so, you know, it really eats me up that, you know, for 4 years, you know, I've got to pace myself in terms of the type of anger I have, or I'll give myself cancer. But just seeing this guy so confident, just seeing him sit there saying that, you know, we did a poll in our country. And
they love me.
And they say that they like my foreign policy. But here's what I'm telling you. This dude is being shot up, or he's on some sort of cocktail. His jaw keeps going. I think he's on some sort of Wellbutrin, Ritalin, cocaine-based something. The dude is jacked. The guy is on the dope. And I think he's justifying it, because think about it. You know, who else has access? Him and Cheney. You know, they are just the whores of the pharmaceutical industry. They are getting the good stuff, dude. I mean, you know, Cheney's probably got a new heart. He's got medicines. He doesn't. His blood isn't even blood anymore. It's some sort of glucose kind of plasma e-liquid stuff.
You think they took Cheney's heart from a living human being?
I don't know what they did, but I'm just telling you, the neocon death cult is stronger than ever in terms of being ideologically supported by pharmaceutical genius.
That's what
I'm saying.
Yeah.
Do you believe me?
Well, you know, this blue state thing that Brendan was talking about, that actually has a list of different areas where you can find out who contributes what to whom.
Right.
You'd be surprised who contributes to the Republicans versus who contributes to the Democrats.
All we can eat, as progressives and Democrats, Arby's. We're limited to Arby's.
I have to turn in my computer.
And you got a Dell?
I got a Dell too.
What was it, like 76%?
71-29.
Yeah, Republican. They all give a little money to both.
Hewlett-Packard is 61-38 Democrat.
And IBM's primarily Democrat?
Yes, IBM's 70-29.
Are they hedging their bets, or is it just, how does that work when a company gives to both?
Well, when they give to both, they want access to both.
Yeah.
Or whichever one is in power.
All right, so let's get into Iraq. Let's do this.
Oh, man, this is some sad stuff going on in Iraq.
What is it? What's the name of that website again? What is it, Brendan? Choose the Blue.
ChooseTheBlue.com.
We got a link to it on Morning's Edition. Check it out. It's pretty, it's compelling, because you realize that there's no way out.
Yeah, right.
All you can do is, you know, eat Arby's and use Apple computers, if that's all right with you. Or eat organic, of course.
Yeah.
So they're sending a bunch of new troops in.
They're looking to raise the number from 138,000 to 150,000. This is primarily to supervise the January 30th. Elections inside of Iraq. Now, you might want to ask yourself, how many Iraqi troops are they going to be increasing?
How are they going to do that?
Well, that's exactly the point. How are they going to do that? They can't use Iraqi troops. Nobody's going to fight.
This whole
nobody's going to do this.
It's a sham. I don't even know. You know, if it, first of all, you know, if you were against the war to begin with and still against it, you know, as I am, this particular war for being based on false premises, that, you know, even if they'd gone in with what Shinseki said, which was 300,000, they might have had a shot. But now that's they're still talking about not, you know, half of that.
Yeah.
And the truth of the matter is this thing is just going to go on and on. And I have no idea, you know, if they manage these elections. I mean, the whole thing seems like, and from everyone we've talked to, from, you know, Mick Ware to other people we've talked to about Iraq, this whole thing is just a sham. There's still going to be chaos. There's not going to be... What do you think is going to happen, Riley? Are they going to pull out right after this or just move over the border to Iran?
I think they may have to reinstitute the draft if they're going to keep these numbers up. I mean, I don't know how they're going to do this. First of all, you got to start with the fact that 40% of the troops in Iraq are either guard or reserves, okay? These people have been promised that they were going to be out after a certain time.
Yes.
What they're doing by increasing this number to 150,000 is keeping some of these troops in. Now,
if
you want to supervise elections, that's one thing. But they're also supposed to be going after insurgents in and around Fallujah. That's the dangerous work.
Right.
That's the problem work. That's the problem with those IEDs along the side of the road. Something blows up and there's a bunch of people dead, including, by the way, a firefighter from New York City, a guy who was a hero at Ground Zero. Went into the was in the National Guard, in the Army National Guard, a guy named Christian Engeldrum, 39 years old. There's a report here in New York today that his wife is pregnant with their third child, and he was killed over in Iraq.
A victim of Bush's arrogance and negligence.
It's unbelievable. Another firefighter was suffered serious shrapnel wounds, and he is actually a guy named Daniel Swift. He's in Germany for treatment. He's expected to recover. But Engeldrum was a five-year firefighter. He was also a police officer. He was on active duty in the Army from 86 to 91.
Again, and I'll say this again because it's the only thing I can hope for, is that I believe that this, you know, that what they're trying to do is they're going to keep the war going until they completely bankrupt this country and, you know, put all the government's money into military contracts, all right? So the country is bankrupt. That way they'll be forced to privatize, you know, social programs, all right? And that'll make the chasm between rich and poor so great they'll actually be able to recruit for the armed forces by saying, hungry, need a place to sleep. Three square meals. But I think that's it. They're shameless about this, and I think that what's going to happen, in my hopes, sadly this is all I can hope for, is that they drive this country into such a ditch that the people that we think, you know, are unable to get back, the people whose lives are compromised completely on an economic level by Republican policy, will wake the hell up, and hopefully some Democratic leadership will have some bigger, broader ideas on how to engage the people that are in a position to where they really need help and give them the help that they need.
Here's the other problem, Mark, and this is a possibility. It is entirely possible, because there's some neoconservatives, believe it or not, who are backing this idea. Increase the troop strength to 150,000 through the end of January, and then start withdrawing them. Little by little, or in quick stages as they continue to put pressure on other countries to train Iraqi troops. Basically say, y'all got it. It's yours. It's your country. You got a government. Now you take care of it.
And then, like, they could do that and then just shut the press off, and everybody would think that it's a big success.
Exactly. Because they can construct their own success. That's the thing that the election proved, if it didn't prove anything else, that they have the horses within this administration to construct their own successful reality.
Right.
Otherwise, how in the world would Condoleezza Rice end up being Secretary of State?
Well, for more for reporters, for, like, you know, like Mick Ware, who's got the nads to stay in there and do it, apparently there's a tremendous, you know, and this is clear, but there's a tremendous lack of courage within the press corps to even stay in a zone that's challenging or frightening or death, you know, deadly. You know, which it used to be, that used to be how you made your bones. That would be what you would do. That's how you got the story. That's how you got the Pulitzer. That's how you, you know, guaranteed that journalism would maintain its integrity on into the future.
When people realize that journalists are not safe, and this started, you know, back with Daniel Pearl, remember him?
Yep.
When it started there, when they started realizing that somebody could go for an interview and end up dead.
Careerism.
That's when people decided, look, you know what? I'll make my bones here.
Careerism versus courage. We'll be back with, we're going to talk about abstinence, if that's okay. Abstinence-only policy. We're going to talk about, you know, again, how the religious right is trying, but, you know, really failing if you look at the numbers. It's a propaganda campaign. It's 16 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition. It's more than just a commute companion. Listen online at morningsedition.com when you get to work, courtesy of Air America Radio.
To pass the hour, Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Hi.
You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. Today I had to cancel my therapist appointment because I'm going to Seattle for the weekend. Tomorrow Al Sharpton will be here, we think.
Yes, he'll be here.
Yes, he will be
Trust me, he's my friend.
Oh, this is going to be nice. Old friends. I am going to Seattle Friday and Saturday night, four shows. Come on down. Giggles Comedy Club, giggles comedy club.com. If you're interested and you're up in that area, if you're listening to us at what is now the middle of the night, almost past the middle of the night, but I'm going to be backed up with dreams. Here's my dream last night. I'm at the New Museum of Modern Art with my dead cat, Butch. Magnificent, full of light and sunshine. But since she can't smoke, Butch is irritable. She says, what about the art of smoking? Has no one considered that? First we see a Warhol of Marilyn Monroe. Butch sneers, his world and his testicles are empty. And he prefers it that way. Warhol is a sterile clown, proud of his own poop. Go back to Studio 54, eunuch. Next, we come across a Cubist Picasso painting of three musicians. Butch says, now here's a man with something between his legs. It is a shame that all this ridiculous painting took time away from his filthy lovemaking. He might have amounted to something. Then we saw Rothko glowing with rich colors. Butch says, oh, yes, so sensitive, so tedious. No wonder he killed himself. He probably died of boredom. I say, hey, I'm trying to enjoy this, Butch. Why do you have to be such a downer? Butch says, because we are in a mausoleum, Mark Maron. Here's where the corpse of Western culture is left to rot. I find contempt is the only appropriate response. I say, don't you believe people can leave something for future generations to enjoy and inspire them? Butch says, I suppose. But why? Life is to be lived now, Mark Maron. Not wasting time staining a bedsheet like an incontinent eight-year-old. Perhaps if someone pleasured himself all over the canvas, I could appreciate that. We just happen to be standing in front of a huge Jackson Pollock drip painting. Butch eyes get wide, and she cries, exactly! Brilliant! Pollock's orgasm must have lasted for hours to cover so much white space with his seed. Magnificent! An eight-year-old girl was standing next to us. She looks up and says, Mom, what's an orgasm? Huh? What's an orgasm? The mom glared at us and yanked the girl away from the Pollock. Nice work, Butch, I say. Butch shrugs and says, I'm just trying to leave something for future generations to enjoy. I woke up and my bed was filled with turpentine.
Ooh, ooh,
ooh. Ooh, that was good. Speaking of orgasms or lack thereof, George Bush, our president, or our supposed president, the puppet of the neocon death cult, has decided that he's going to seek funds for abstinence education. Abstinence education. Can you believe it? President Bush's re-election ensures that more federal money will flow to abstinence education that precludes discussion of birth control, even as the administration awaits evidence that the approach gets kids to refrain from sex. Henry Waxman
from California
has been on this. He's been doing the big report, him and his people, and they've looked through it, they've sorted it out, and it's it's mind-bending what these people said. But first, let me read this. This is an email. I didn't mean to cut you off. We're going to get to you. My son was subjected to abstinence training, quote-unquote, abstinence training in his Florida high school. The good news is that the presenters were so lame, it was just a big joke to the kids, although it wasted about a week of class time. Not needless to say, millions of dollars of taxpayer money, I put that in. The kids in the class challenged the presentation and the presenters, questioned the assumptions and misinformation, and outright laughed at them. Let us not forget that teenagers have highly sensitive BS monitors, and this abstinence really sets it off. Gotta love those kids. Thank you for the email. So, Riley, what were you going to say?
Well, I mean, you know, Congressman Henry Waxman, no, by the way, wild-eyed radical leftist.
Yes.
Despite the fact he's from California, says that 11 of the 13 most widely used abstinence-only programs underestimate the effectiveness of condoms. exaggerate the prevalence of emotional and physical distress following abortion, blur science and religion, and get fundamental scientific facts absolutely wrong.
Let's go over some of that. These are mind-bending, all right? Of the 13 most common curricula, 11 used in 25 states by 69 organizations contain these major errors, all right? So this is in federally funded curricula. This is where tax money is going to because we've let the zealots take over local government. On pregnancy, Sexual Health Today claims touching someone's genitals can result in pregnancy. That may be true, but the situation has to be really right.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not just touching. There's a lot more work that needs to be done there. And if you need that kind of work done, go to a fertility clinic. All right. This is ridiculous. All right. Pregnancy results one out of every seven times a couple uses a condom. Can I just say, I've been with the woman I'm with for 5 years. And, you know, maybe I'm irresponsible, maybe not. We've never used a condom, all right, and we've not gotten pregnant, right? So I'll just take that, you know, personally disrefute that.
Not only that,
most
studies say that condom use is effective about 85 to 90% of the time. Mm-hmm. One out of every seven times, I'm not sure. Well, actually, out of every seven would be about 14%.
Yeah, if you're wearing it on your hand, you know, I mean, it's like, come on. I mean, you know, they work most of the time. I mean, they're obviously nothing is 100% effective. And, you know, if you don't, deal with it in the right way, it's possible. But this is a misfact. This is not a misfact. What's the word I'm looking for? It's a lie.
It's a misstatement.
Conception and abortion. Conception, also known as fertilization, occurs when one sperm unites with one egg in the upper third of the fallopian tube. This is when life begins.
Yes.
No. No. After conception, the tiny baby moves down the fallopian tube towards the mother's uterus about the 6th to 10th day after conception, when the baby is no bigger than this dot. Babies snuggle into the soft nest in the lining of the mother's uterus. No. At this point, the baby consists of 107 to 256 cells. Cells. We'll be back with more of this. This is mind-blowing.
This is mind-blowing, and, my biology class never taught me any of that. Also coming up, Lawton Small, Planet Bush, and...
Calls?
Yeah, calls, too.
866-303-2270.
Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley on Morning Sedition.
Yes.
It's Air America Radio. We're going to take some calls here in a second. 866-303-2270, but I got to take this call first, because you know, since our president is openly operating in a different reality, we think it's important that America know what's happening in his alternate universe. Luckily, we have a staffer who lives in that world, and once again, joining us on the phone from Planet Bush is, of course, Lawton Smalls. Good morning, Lawton.
Good morning, Mark. God's got tweezers, and he's going to pluck the sin right out of your eyebrows.
Oh, goody.
It's a good morning.
Okay. Let's talk about these cabinet appointments, all right? All right, Lawton? Lots of blacks, Latinos.
Excuse me. I wish you wouldn't throw around hate speech like black and Latino. That implies that these words signify certain physical and cultural traits that have been passed down for generations. These cabinet appointments are American.
Right.
Let's not sully their achievement with your little labels, okay? As if Condoleezza Rice had anything in common with a black woman.
Now, wait a minute. All right, Lawton, these people do have certain physical and cultural traits and represent voting blocks that Republicans haven't been able to appeal to, and that's the only reason that Bush appointed them.
That's President Bush.
All right.
And he appointed them because the system works. That's what's so exciting about America, Mark. Everyone starts right at zero. Everyone has the same chance
to
succeed.
You're saying that since Bush picked a few wealthy, privileged minorities to be in his cabinet, every black and Latino in this country has the exact same chance to succeed as white people?
Well, your label-itis gets a little tired.
All right.
Yes, that's exactly right. I mean, every baby in America comes out of the womb. Here's a starter pistol. Bang! And then it's go, go, go. May the best man or woman win.
Oh,
the
man.
Cream rises,
oh,
Mark.
Come
the
on.
Cream rises. Then you freeze it, put it on a cone, and eat it.
All right. So,
delicious.
So some kid born in the ghetto has the exact same opportunities as a guy like Bush who grew up in a family of disgusting wealth and influence.
Oh, Mark, there aren't any ghettos. That's one of your socialist words you people make up to make folks feel bad about
it. Oh, man.
As for President Bush, he's president because he's the most qualified qualified and competent man in America, period. He worked his way up with nothing but his two hands and the iron will to succeed.
Ugh.
It's the same with his cabinet appointment. I got a word for you, Mark. Meritocracy.
No, no.
Learn it, live it.
Those are partisan political...
That's where we are, baby.
Listen to me. Those people we're talking about are partisan political hacks who will say anything to rich white men in power to get ahead. They hardly represent progress for average people of their race.
Achievement.
Okay?
Achievement.
Well, you hear me?
You know, I hate to put on your race goggles, Mark Maron, but Carlos Gutierrez is as fine a representative of the Belgian people as you'll ever meet.
Come on,
forgive
man.
Me, Belgian American.
No, he's not Belgian.
They get very sensitive.
He's not Belgian. You know, look, you play the race card for your own political ends and then pretend that everything's fair and equal when you know you're going to win.
Merit.
All right?
Well, I'm sorry if the truth points out your own shortcomings.
No, no,
because
no, no.
I really think you had potential, but you chose not to apply yourself like the people in Bush's cabinet, so maybe now you're a little jealous.
No, I'm not jealous.
I just think it's too bad. You would have made a fine black Secretary of the Interior.
No, look at Lawton. This is not this is not about me.
Merit.
I am not jealous.
Merit.
This is about ruthless ideologues trying to whitewash the inequities in this society with phony appointments that will change nothing.
Merit.
The field is not level, and you know this. You hate it. It's not level. You know it's not level. It is not level. Stop it. Stop it. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, let's have it.
They're tokens, Mark.
That's
tokens.
It. Yeah.
Bush doesn't care about dealing with them. He just wants their votes.
There you go.
Republicans will do anything to avoid race problems, and then I attack you.
Yeah.
That's what we do when we're wrong. We attack and attack.
Yeah. Yeah, bring
we
it.
Really
that's right.
We don't have the
that's good. See
we're
that?
Just throwing
yeah, see that?
Whatever.
Look
we
at what
know.
You are. You're just a little baby.
Know.
Okay. You feel better? You feel better? It's okay, buddy. You feel
better?
Oh, God.
Whoa.
You all right?
Two hands and the iron will to succeed.
All right,
George W. Bush.
All right. That's it. Goodbye.
Zero.
Goodbye, one.
God bless you.
Yeah, yeah. God bless you, too. Oh, my God. Sometimes, you know, it's too real, isn't it?
Well, you know, he's starting to scare me because if we had gotten him into the abstinence, then God knows what he would have said.
Yeah, well, maybe we'll get into that with him next week. But look, here's some more stuff that we've been talking about from the 13 most common curricula, 11 used in 25 states by 69 organizations. This is stuff taxpayer money is paying for. This is stuff that Bush wants to put more money into. You know, abstinence programs do not work, but some of the information they're putting out into the world is ridiculous. Dig this. A 43-year-old fetus is a, quote, thinking person. Big decisions are being made. Big decisions.
Yes.
A premature birth, a major cause of mental retardation, is increased following the abortion of the first pregnancy. This is a lie.
It's out and out lie.
It's just a lie. Me, My World, My Future curriculum teaches kids that women who have abortions are more prone to suicide.
Where's the data?
As many as 10% of women who have abortions become sterile. That's a lie. These are scientific, there's scientific proofs against these. But these type of people, they've already proven that they will stand in the face of logic, science, truth, reality. They will not honor their own economic situations and vote the proper way to maybe encourage some help for them. They will not, look at science as being fact. It's ridiculous that this is happening in America in 2000 and whatever it is.
Four.
Yeah, I know.
You know, there's a guy named A.C. Green. I know you don't know who he is because he's a former basketball player for the L.A. Lakers. Aside from his game, he got famous because he said he would not have sex before he was married.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, he has a curriculum, apparently, called A.C. Green's Game Plan.
Mm-hmm.
That is part and parcel of these common curricula that are being used in these different organizations. Now, quoting from A.C. Green's Game Plan, the popular claim that condoms help prevent the spread of STDs is not supported by the data.
Yeah.
Now, can you imagine that? Where in the world did it? What data are they talking about?
Yeah, the data doesn't exist, and they're saying, so don't have sex. The truth of the matter is, just condoms will prevent many sexual transmitted diseases. Condoms will prevent most pregnancies. That's a reality. What this is about is shaming teenagers into believing that their sexuality is a bad thing. It's shaming teenagers into thinking that they don't have the right to their sexual feelings or honoring their sexual feelings. And what that does is once you shame, if you're effective, if they get 5 out of 50 teenagers to believe this stuff, those teenagers become malleable to any ideological propaganda that they put out there. Once you actually successfully, you know, sort of neuter someone's, you know, psychic sexuality, they become very easy pawns for just about anything. Sexual repression is one of the primary causes of neurotic behavior, and also it is one of the primary, you know, dispositions of followers, of people who are easily led.
Here's what I don't understand. Under Bill Clinton, not to bring him up again, teen pregnancy in the black community hit the lowest level since they started keeping numbers. Without an abstinence-only program, without somebody telling you that condom use and stopping the spread of HIV is not supported by the data, without all these lies and garbage.
Yeah.
And yet, Bush thinks that this is going to work better than that?
Dig this. Problems including isolation, jealousy, poverty, heartbreak, substance abuse, unstable long-term commitments, sexual violence, embarrassment, depression, personal disappointment, feelings of being used, loss of honesty, loneliness, and suicide, quote, can be eliminated by being abstinent until marriage.
Really?
And then after that, all that stuff becomes active.
That's right. Once you're married, you're done.
Yeah. This is like pre-marriage. That's what happens after you get married. So there's a lot to look forward to. Look, we're going to take your calls after this. It's 866-303-2270. Sorry to leave you hanging. I know there's a lot of you out there that want to talk. Call us up. 42 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Join the Morning Sedition. Call 866-303-2270. That's 866-303-2270. Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
This is crazy, man. It's 48 past the hour. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley. Dig this. You got a mouthful. You take your time and eat this. From the Choosing Best curriculum, all right, abstinence education, this is insidious. This is crazy. We cannot underestimate the power of the propaganda of these people. If you think this isn't important, if you think that these people don't have a foot in the door, you know, obviously they do. It's not as big as we thought. But the Christian right and the people that want to own the brains of young people for the wrong reasons, dig this. This curriculum, Choosing Best, includes a fairy tale of a knight who decides not to marry the princess because she offered successful tips on slaying a dragon, leaving him feeling, quote-unquote, ashamed. He marries a maiden instead, quote, only after making sure she knew nothing about nooses or poison. All right?
What?
Quote, moral of the story, occasional suggestions and assistance may be all right, but too much of it will lessen a man's confidence or even turn him away from his princess. Unbelievable. So, them women are bad. You got to find yourself a stupid one who will do exactly what you want her to, okay? That's the moral there. You can't trust them because any sort of advice they'll give you is just meant to make you feel small, little man. And that goes for sex, too. They don't want to get involved with the sex stuff before you marry because first you got to find yourself a woman who's too stupid to know better, hopefully one that's never had sex with anybody, so you can, you know, fool them into thinking that you're a stud in your lack of experience, all right? Dig that. You don't know how to have sex. She doesn't know how to have sex. So this disaster could last a lifetime, and you think you're doing a good job until, you know, the both of you get addicted to internet porn and wonder why you can't have sex like that. You know, this doesn't unfold well. You know, I can't stand these people. They're just feeding the worst of it. Maybe they're actually pawns for the porn industry. Abstinence leads to porn. That's what I say. Omar, how do you do it now? What do you say, Omar?
How do you what?
How do you do it?
How y'all doing?
All right. What's up, Omar?
Well, this is like actually like a two-part answer because, for one, the government doesn't want to put money into this stuff because, hey, they're not going to get money out of it, and they feel that it's not worth it for the big business girls and stuff like that. But another part of it is when you have a situation like, you know, people having sex, of course these young people are going to do it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's inevitable.
Yeah.
They're going to do it.
Yeah.
And what happens is these people figure like, hey, well, we're not going to get money off of it. And if they go out there and, you know, they have these things where they're not going to be able to control. And that's what it's all really about is control.
That's what you're talking about. Thanks for calling, Omar.
No, he's right.
The thing is like, you know, the money, but they are putting money into these abstinence programs, but I think the supposition is that they're not putting as much as they would into effectively teaching people about sex education.
Well, you know, the amazing thing is you're talking about abstinence until marriage. You know what the average marriage age is in America?
What?
26.
Yeah.
So people are going to stay abstinent until 26?
No, not be able to get married.
Not in Manhattan.
Glenn in Long Island. How are you, Glenn?
Hey, Glenn.
Hey, good morning, guys.
What's up, fella?
How you doing?
Abstinence only has about as much chance of working as something the government tried years ago called prohibition.
Oh, right. Yeah.
So, but in, but instead of, you know, gin mills in places, underground bars, people can just go into their own, you know, into their own office with their porn. That's
yeah.
A,
yeah. They won't be happy until sex crimes includes all sex.
Good one. That's a good one, Glenn.
Good
Thanks,
point,
buddy.
Glenn.
That's right. He's absolutely right. Jack in Florida, how are you?
Hey, Jack.
Good morning.
What's up, buddy?
I just wanted to say, I grew up in the South in Jacksonville, Florida, about 10 miles from Georgia.
Uh-huh.
Southern Baptist South.
Yeah.
And I went to a school, Victory Christian Academy, where abstinence was taught all the time.
Uh-huh.
Sixth grade, I even had a teacher that told us anything we did sexually before we got married, touching ourselves, any sex, we would remember forever. And every time you had sex with your wife, it would flash into your mind and ruin it.
Wow. Oh, no. That's creative. I got to give whoever did, whoever told you that, I give him credit for creativity.
But we learn as adults, Jack, that sometimes thinking about those past things actually helps sex with the wife, doesn't it?
So I just, then I went on not, never knowing anything about sex, and where I learned was sneaking into local stores and buying Penthouse, and I learned sex from Penthouse Forum.
Oh, didn't we all? Yeah.
They're wanting us not to ever know anything, so I go to exactly what they hate to learn it.
Yeah.
It makes no sense.
And you get the good information.
That's all right. They're going to ban Penthouse before very long,
Jack,
if they have their way.
Yeah, but they can't. I mean, how are they going to stop internet porn? It seems to me that the sort of lack of attention to the internet porn issue, you know, by the Christian right is suspect. I think they're in collusion with the porn people. I think that...
So everybody makes out like bandits.
Well,
right?
By repressing people and, you know, and honoring, you know, outdated abusive gender roles and codependence and all the things that are, you know, that corrupt within the family, that are actually corrupt, actually promote porn in the levels of consumption and creating new porn stars. That's what I believe. Okay, let's you remind me to do this. I've got the codependent story of the week. I'll do it at the top of the hour. All right, anyways, Denise in Connecticut, how are you?
Hi, Denise.
I'm good.
Good. What's going on?
I'm a pastor in the United Church of Christ.
Oh, you guys are in the news.
Yeah,
we're
very
in
much
the news, and that's why I'm calling.
Okay.
We were going to run some national ads.
Right.
And CBS and NBC refused to air the ads because they said they were too controversial.
Isn't that ridiculous?
That is so sick.
And they were controversial because they had, the church is all inclusive. They included gay people in the ads.
Yes.
And the reason, what do you think the reason is that they were actually banning these ads?
I think that they are afraid to get in touch with the Bush
right.
administration.
Or the Christian right specifically.
Yeah, because the Christian right doesn't like the idea of our churches getting bigger.
Right. So, and now in your church, how do you handle sexuality?
I talk about St. Paul, but what Paul was really talking about was the idea of people treating each other as human beings created in the image of God.
Right.
So our sexual ethic is really more based on respect and regard for other human beings. That was really sort of the basis of what he was talking about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Jesus didn't say anything about homosexuality.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And what about these abstinence programs as a pastor? How do you feel about that, teaching abstinence to the kids?
I don't teach that stuff to the kids. I'm not a church school teacher.
Mm-hmm.
But they just really don't work. I mean, I think that we should develop a new sexual ethic in this country that's based more on reality and on what we call the kerygma, the core of Jesus' teaching.
Mm.
Now, Denise, I want to ask you something, because there's the United Church of Christ is quoting CBS, one of the two networks that refused the ad. By the way, Fox accepted it, but they say, quote, because this commercial touches on the exclusion of gay couples and the fact that the executive branch has recently proposed a constitutional amendment to define marriage as a union between a man and a woman, this spot is unacceptable for broadcast. They told you that? They told the church that?
Unbelievable. First of all, it's they should refer back to this little amendment we call the First Amendment.
Yeah.
With the separation of religion and state. And the irony is unbelievable. Our church traces its roots back to the Pilgrims. If it wasn't for us, there wouldn't be a First Amendment. There wouldn't be freedom of religion. There wouldn't be freedom of religion for people like Jerry Falwell. So we let them have their freedom of religion, but then they want to deny it to us, the people who invented it?
Yeah, that's a good point, and obviously very, you know, thought through, you know, because you guys deal with this all the time. It's amazing to me that the Christian right is so. How can we get more open-minded pastors like yourself to start, you know, countering their propaganda?
Well, this whole campaign was the idea behind it.
Yes.
I mean, a lot of our churches are based in New England, and we're used to being very quiet and very polite, and we're very open. I mean, I'm very proud of the fact that my church includes both Democrats and Republicans and, you know, people in the Christian right and the Christian left.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's about coming together and listening to each other and learning to respect each other.
Right.
Do I
have to respect some of them?
Don't get them started, Denise. Don't get them started.
Yeah.
There are good Republicans.
Mm-hmm.
There are the people on the right. Most of them are very sincere. I'm not going to comment necessarily on the leaders, but most of the people in the Christian right churches
sincere but misguided.
Sincere.
Come on, they're a little misguided. Some of them.
Well, it's where they're coming from.
They've gotten off the path. Come on, they've gotten off the path.
Come on.
they're not on the same path that I'm on. Let's
okay.
There you go. Me neither.
Well, thanks for calling. Really nice talking.
Appreciate it. Mm-hmm. And by the way, you can see this spot.
Yeah.
At www.stillspeaking.com.
It's interesting that Fox picked it up.
Yeah.
You know, what's the logic there? I can't quite figure that one out. That CBS and NBC don't pick it up because specifically they're worried about, you know, does Fox have less to lose?
I don't know.
You got to be happy.
It's the network of the OC. Maybe they figured what the heck.
Maybe it's the other way. Maybe they're doing it to get people pissed off. Maybe they're doing it to generate the hate.
You know what? I wouldn't be surprised if they did it so that Bill O'Reilly would have something else to talk about.
Yeah, maybe.
You know?
That's probably true.
Coming up in the next hour, Eric Bogosian.
Oh, good. That's right.
He's here with us. That's right. We're going to talk a little bit about Bill Frist and his investments in the stock market and much, much more as we roll on here at Morning's Edition on Air America Radio.
Morning's Edition on Air America Radio.
I'm Mark Maron. It's 6 past the hour here on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition.
Good morning, geniuses, philosopher, kings and queens, anxious self-scrutinizers, latent haters, ironically detached people, and engaged reactionaries, a-holes, a welcome to you, big tent thinkers, all of you. How are you? Nice to see you. Even those people I annoy, good morning. Nice to see you. And Mark Riley, of course, a good morning to you.
And you don't annoy me at all.
Yeah, I it's very nice of you to say that, and I kind of believe you. But you know, let me tell you something. I annoy myself. After a certain point, you know, when I come into the office at 3 a.m. with nothing but cat problems, I annoy myself that I'm talking about cats. My life has gotten so small. You know, I was talking to my wife the other day. You know, after we did the, I make my wife laugh pretty frequently.
Mm-hmm.
But I got one of these huge, weird belly laughs, just that was for the wrong reason kind of things out of her. After we did that thing at the high school the other day, Bronx High School Science. Like, you know, it took me a long time to get out there. You know what I mean? I remember calling him from the car, and I was stuck in traffic. I'm like, why the hell did I do this? Why am I going to go out there? I mean, it's taking me too long. I'm stuck in traffic. I'm probably not going to make it. Why do I agree to do this? And you know what? I'm not going to be able to get home to steam my vegetables. And my wife was like, out of everything, you know, that was, she thought, the funniest thing I said. That, like, you do a few things in your life, Riley, to control your environment, to make yourself feel comfortable. You know, one of mine is cooking vegetables.
Okay.
All right? That's all. Is there a problem? I buy the vegetables. I want to cook them when they're fresh. I don't want to wait a day. I want to do it now. And when I can't, I'm literally like, I cannot believe that those collard greens are going to sit unattended to, you know, in my refrigerator. And, like, theoretically, I should be like, who cares? I spent $2. You know, more food is thrown away every day. I can't stand throwing away food. All right? Okay. Look, this is not important. All right? Number one, it's not important. What's important is this story and the story we're about to talk about. Finally, you know, some people are being indicted for things in the Republican world, which makes me happy. But dig this.
Oh, right? Yeah.
This took place in France. I'm sad that it didn't take place here, because here it would have been just tragic, you know, sort of like, you know, ridiculous, you know, codependent sadness. But in France, it's sort of romantic. But a man who blinded his wife in a failed murder and suicide attempt won a suspended 5-year sentence on Tuesday after his spouse publicly forgave him and begged the court to acquit him. Jean-Claude and Chantal Gaudry hugged and sobbed in relief after the jury, clearly impressed by her devotion to her husband of 37 years, announced it would convict him for attempted murder, but waived the sentence. He could have received life in jail. Right? Jean-Claude Gaudry, 57, an architect, decided to commit suicide 2 years ago because of mounting debts, but kill his wife beforehand so she would not have to bear the financial burden without him.
How nice of him.
But if it wasn't French, wouldn't it be like, this is ridiculous. But because it's French, it's like, oh, this is powerful. You know what I mean? You know, this is real romance. It's dark. It's interesting. It's like, it's a love that transcends, you know? But after he shot his sleeping wife in the head, her son burst into the room and stopped him from trying to kill himself. Chantal survived, but lost her sight. Man, who's... I got to make a movie. You know what? Get someone on the phone. I want to buy the screen rights to this story now. I want to make a French movie. All right, Jean-Claude confessed to shooting her with a hunting rifle, but said he wanted to end an unbearable situation rather than kill her. Okay, and then she said, quote, "I know he did not want to murder me. He was desperate," she told the court. And now, like, now they live together. You know, hopefully people reached out after this story and gave them the money to pay their debts so that, you know, he could live happily, you know, kind of taking care of her for the rest of her life because she lost her sight. But the love transcends. It's like so sick, but it breaks my heart.
Sounds like Mary Jo Buttafuoco. Remember her? Remember when she got shot by Amy Fisher?
Yeah, but that's a whole different thing.
She forgave him, though.
Right.
She went to, you know, asked for leniency, not for Amy, but, as you know, stayed with him until she finally divorced him.
Right, right.
And so, remember, now she's still, you know, she's still feeling the after effects of getting shot.
Yes, but he didn't shoot her. I mean,
no.
Could you imagine just like it reminds me of that scene in Usual Suspects where, you know, he kills his wife and kid. You know, in the flashbacks of Kaiser Soze, as opposed to be humiliated or let them get away with that. Just brutal. But let's get to a real news, because I know... there's one other art story. This is pretty interesting. La Demos... I can't even pronounce that. That they decided
Kevin DeCalo is French, isn't it?
Yes. Pablo... Yeah, we'll talk to Eric Bogosian about that when he comes. Let's talk about art with Eric. Let's talk about now something, you know, election fraud... Phone jamming, anyways, and an ex-Bush campaign chair is indicted in a phone jamming case. And this has been going on for a while. Like, this is from a piece in Harper's from a while back. A statement signed by Alan Raymond, a former head of the political consulting company GOP Marketplace. Raymond pleaded guilty in June to conspiring to violate federal law that prohibits making harassing telephone calls. But what these guys did was something much different. It more resembles this, that this guy, not the guy who's being indicted today, but this Mr. Raymond agreed to engage a vendor to perform the phone jam in exchange for a payment of $15,600 on October 30th. All right, this means that what they did was that he hired some service outside of Ohio, in Idaho, to jam a series of numbers that were used to by Democrats get out the vote effort.
Yeah. Which is a crucial part of how the Democrats try and vote pull.
It's a crucial part of how anybody does it. But this was in New Hampshire, right? Mm-hmm. But I mean, isn't that's a, you know, so they blocked six main numbers,
yes.
You know, ranging from you know, the Democratic headquarters, all right, to Democratic field offices, to you know, even a firefighters association in Manchester. Yeah, they had a ride the polls program, and they hired this outside company. I don't even know how phone jamming works, but I guess they tap into the line.
No, you just call and hang up. You just keep calling and hanging up. See, you know, they can generate these calls without having to
sit there. By computer?
Yeah.
Oh, so that's what they did. So they hired a subcontractor to continually call these numbers so they couldn't effectively work. Now,
exactly.
Today, lay it out for me, Riley. This guy is being nailed.
Well, yeah, and it's interesting that the executive director of the New Hampshire Republican State Committee, Chuck McGee, already pleaded guilty. Well, this guy, James Tobin, was Bush's New England campaign chair. And he has been indicted on charges. He took part in this same phone jamming operation. It took place on Election Day 2002, not just this past Election Day, 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Tobin stepped down 2 weeks before Election Day after the Democrats accused him of some involvement here. He's been charged with conspiracy to commit telephone harassment and aiding and abetting. He could get 5 years in the slammer for this.
Mm.
Now, among the races affected by this was a Senate contest between Governor Gene Shaheen and Republican Congressman John E. Sununu. Sununu won that race by about 20,000 votes. The Democrats said the indictment was great, but wondered about the timing here.
Uh-huh.
Why did they wait until after the election to bring this up and to
Why
bring
do
it
you
forward?
Think?
Well, because they didn't want anybody to know. They
right.
didn't want people to, you know, I mean, hey, it's
that
really
makes
pretty
sense.
Simple.
That's pretty logical.
Nothing could get away, get in the way, that is, of the...
So this is just one of many sort of tactics these guys use, both illegal and just like through redistricting, which isn't essentially illegal, but when it's done to sort of benefit the ruling party, so to speak, it's definitely suspect. But this phone jamming, then the placement of marginal numbers of machines in densely populated minority neighborhoods.
Yes.
Then, of course, there's these new machines with no paper trails that seem to be completely, many of them malfunctioning, causing voter discrepancies.
Means to an end. See, it's
but they
all
hit
connected.
It on all points.
All points. What we talked about last hour. In terms of the abstinence only and all, that is the end game that all of this was working toward. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
In other words, they are trying to get Bush reelected and trying to keep a Republican Congress so that they can push forward all of these different programs. Arnold Schwarzenegger out in California has got his own little program, some special election he's planning that would redraw district lines in California.
So that's the thing is that can be fought within local in the courts and within local governments. But there is a march in Ohio this Saturday, December 4th, at 1 p.m. at the Ohio State House in Columbus, Ohio. It's a rally to ensure that every vote is counted. It's also a rally to show that we need election reform in this country. There's no doubt about that. There's so many different ways that these people can influence elections and screw them around. This has been going on probably since the beginning of America, since the beginning of democracy. It's gone both ways. But just for the people's sake, it would be nice if we had some sort of standardized, federalized election system that actually counted every vote, obviously. But I don't know if they can pull it off. I want them to pull it off. I want it to happen, but I have such a deep distrust of the ruling powers that it seems to me that even in the 60s when Kennedy was elected, that was suspected vote fraud. That this stuff has gone around and happened for so many years that it's going to take quite a fight. So if you're in Ohio December 4th and you want to do this, you should get involved. 1 p.m. at the Ohio State House in Columbus, Ohio, for a rally to get the votes counted there. We've got Eric Bogosian coming up in a minute. We're going to talk about politics, art, audiences, and we'll probably just let him spin for a little while. 16 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition on the air and online at morningsedition.com from Air America Radio.
Past the hour, I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Where?
It's right there. It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. We're going to be talking to Eric Bogosian in just a second, but right now, the Palm Pilot was delivered to us by Ramon, again, who wants to be called Ramon, wearing fatigues with actual makeup on his face. He looked injured. I didn't get into it. He left. This is Donald Rumsfeld's schedule for today that was booted off of his Palm Pilot. 8 a.m. Wake up. Go to phone book. Send every 19-year-old from A to F to Iraq. And tell G through L not to take any long vacations. 10 a.m., get together with Tom Ridge before he leaves. To gain maximum support for this war, let's have Al-Qaeda attack the Oscars. 11 a.m., call lawyer, discuss strategy for German lawsuit accusing me of war crimes in Iraq. Our defense, the suit has no merit because it's not a war, it's a liberation. How many times do we have to go over this? 12 noon, to lure Iraqi insurgents to a central location, organize huge guns for PlayStation exchange. Wow. 1 p.m., supervised army recruiting cartoon for grade school kids featuring the hilarious adventures of Shock and Awe. Yeah. All right. 2 p.m. Fire all high-level Latino staffers. That way Bush has no one to replace me with. Kind of weird cadence on the end of that one. That was my fault. Me with. 3 p.m. Call local recruiters. Have them promise recruits that if they sign up for three more months, they get the uncut Abu Ghraib DVD with more than 5 hours of special features. We're done. 10 p.m. Fall asleep to relaxing white noise machine. Choose setting 1, Siege of Baghdad, 2, The Taking of Fallujah, or 3, the classic Rolling into Kuwait. There you go. That's it. That's a little funny. Did it? No.
No.
Right now, here in our studio, again, for the second time, we're happy to have him. His two best-known plays are Talk Radio, Suburbia. He's done everything. He's got a DVD out, Wake Up and Smell the Coffee, which was also a one-man show, yes? Yes? Oh, you brought one.
Ah,
that's
you
very
toys.
Present.
I have nothing to sell, but I brought
that's
all the
very
stuff
nice.
I'm selling.
I got some swag, too.
You got
oh,
a
wonderful.
New
wonderful.
Novel coming out, Wasted Beauty, and apparently he's
it's
going
old,
to...
old novel.
Oh, good. Let me have that,
old,
too.
Old
Maul. Maul is the old novel. How's that? Okay.
Hey, wait a minute. See, he's got the parental advisory.
Uh-huh.
You got rap on here?
Yeah, there's some stuff on there.
That's Eric Bogosian, ladies and gentlemen. There you go.
Yeah.
See, you're going to be playing the devil in the last days of Judas Iscariot.
Yes.
And that's
yes,
a play?
At the Public, yeah. Stephen Geergis'
oh, wow.
new play.
Dude, I've seen you play some evil bastards before.
Yeah, typecasting.
Yeah, I just saw Wonderland on DVD
oh,
for the first time.
Oh, my friend. My brother.
And you look like that dude a little
yes,
bit.
Yes, and he
you?
Just got out of jail.
He did.
Last that, year after serving a lot of time.
What was his name, Nash?
Yeah, Eddie Nash. Eddie Nash.
Eddie, yeah, that was a demonic part. That was a very...
I had so much fun on that movie.
That was about
I mean,
the John Holmes murder. The Wonderland killings.
Oh, okay.
What a great group of people to work with, too.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Henry Val and Josh Lucas and Kate Bosworth.
Lucas was brilliant in that.
Yeah,
and Kilmer was really good,
yeah.
too.
Josh Lucas is... Well, we had a lot of fun. And, you know, it's funny, when you watch a movie... You see things that are happening for 2 minutes on screen, or
yeah.
maybe 30 seconds.
Right.
Josh pistol whipping me, or dragging
right.
me across, or me beating up that. And, you know, that was 4 hours of us just smashing and killing. I had scars on my wrists from the handcuffs. I had pistol whipping, more
wow.
scars on my face. It's a low budget movie, you just do it.
Yeah.
You know, you don't, there's no stuntmen or anything. You
yeah, I had to one,
jump off that
yeah,
thing.
They just, and they just keep making you do it. Just fight him. Keep going. Keep
yeah.
going. There's
looks
no stunt. Yeah, absolutely. So, when you do an evil dude, like when you do Satan, you know, what are you thinking about? How are you going to handle it? I mean, what do you think
hell
Satan
is
does?
What he's thinking about?
What's your concept of Satan? Is he charming? Is he? Is
this
he
is going to be a fairly charming Satan.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is going to be. Yeah, this is a sort of the gentleman Satan.
Yeah, yeah.
Please
yeah.
allow me to introduce
yeah,
myself
yeah, yeah.
kind of Satan.
yeah.
yeah,
like
yeah.
De Niro did Satan in Angel. Was it Angel Heart?
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. And he's a pretty fairly charming Satan.
Yeah. Was one long
this
fingernail?
This is like, what?
What? Didn't he have one long fingernail?
He had
oh,
coke nail.
That's yeah,
nail.
Yeah, that's what I should get. I should start growing that now.
But a lot of people
this
play
is, this is, they put Judas Iscariot
yeah.
on, I don't want to give away too much of the place, you know, Steven's working on it now and we go into rehearsal in January, mm-hmm. but basically Judas Iscariot is pulled back from purgatory and he's put on trial again to kind of relook at the case. Of what
oh, really?
Went on with him
yeah,
and
yeah.
Jesus.
Maybe you got a raw deal?
Yeah,
uh-huh.
that's right.
Okay.
Well, so,
yeah.
And then they say, okay, we need certain, you know, witnesses.
Uh-huh.
And Satan is one of the witnesses. So they bring me, I'm a star witness.
Oh, really?
You know, continuing along with my Law and Order experiences that Mark and I were talking before.
Yeah. Is he going to produce
before.
It like contemporary? Like, is it going to be like a contemporary feel to it?
Well, have you ever seen
on the media a little bit?
Have you ever seen any of the Labyrinth stuff? This is the Labyrinth Theater that's doing it at the Public. And they're originally like a Latino theater, and now it's kind of morphed into anything that's new. And so it's all over. It's very urban,
uh-huh.
New York City, new, old, all blended together. It's absolutely, I mean, the readings that we've been doing, Sam Rockwell's going to do it, and Phil Hoffman's directing, and it's just really funny.
Phil Hoffman?
Yeah, the movie Phil Hoffman, Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Philip Seymour Hoffman. He's directing it, and Sam Rockwell's in it?
Yeah, he directs a lot of the stuff that they do. You know, right now in the theater in New York,
yeah.
we've kind of lost a lot of the kamikaze kind of theater attitude that was around in, like, the 70s and
80s. Like, who are some of those people?
A lot of the stuff that used to happen at the Public, a lot of the, you know, the Mammoth plays, the
right.
Shepherd plays,
yeah.
A lot of the downtown stuff, and
right.
Just do crazy stuff,
right.
And who cares whether
right,
it makes
the stuff
money.
You used to do. You used to go pretty out of control, right?
Well, I had, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, we did stuff, and the point was is to make your friends happy, and a lot of what's going on in the theater today is it's so expensive that your friends actually can't afford to come to see it, so they don't come, and you're basically playing to this sort of dinner theater crowd that's coming down from Scarsdale.
Let's talk more about this because I want to talk about risk taking.
By the way, I wanted to say
we got to go, so you can hold it. We're going to come back and you can say
hold it.
We'll be back in a second with Eric Bogosian. Didn't mean to cut you off. We'll get back to it. So stay here on Air America Radio.
Sedition, delivering you from evil in 3 hours or less on Air America Radio.
For past the hour, Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Yes, it is.
We're sitting here with a playwright, author, actor, Renaissance man, Eric Bogosian, who was about to tell us about a play he just saw.
I just saw Neil LaBute's Fat Pig.
We had him in here. Very smart, nice guy.
And it was terrific.
Yeah?
It was you know, Jeremy Piven and and the rest of the guys.
Yeah.
And it was really fantastic. But, the thing about theater, I mean, I love theater. I've been in the theater since I was in the 10th grade when I was doing Romeo and Juliet or something. And for me, it's a completely different thing than movies or anything else. I just love the theater. And the stuff that I really loved back in the 70s and 80s was stuff that you go to it, and then afterward you have a big argument with each other about it for about 2 hours after you went and saw the show. Because what was he saying? What did that mean? No, that was right. That was wrong. That's something that happens in the theater more than any place else. And this play, this is going to get
well, his movies do that too. I mean, even in The Company of Men I remember after that movie, men and women, with the four people, the four of us went, and he just got into this thing about, what was that about? What is he really saying? Is this loaded in the same way?
This is loaded in the same way. The only difference with this that I noticed is that in the movie, those guys are kind of bad guys, and they do bad things to that deaf, mute girl.
Right.
In this, the people that are the leads are not the bad people. They're actually good people, and then they've got bad people around them. But it's a fantastic examination of, you got to see it. I mean, ostensibly, it's about the fact that this guy's dating a girl that's really heavy.
Yeah.
And his friends are kind of giving him a hard time.
Is it a real heavy girl?
Yeah, she's a heavy girl. But it's what's amazing about it is you sit there watching. You've got two women on Carrie. She was Felicity on
Carrie Russell.
Carrie Russell, yeah. Okay, so she's on stage, and the fat girl is Ashley. I should call her fat girl.
What's the title of the play?
But you're looking at Ashley, and you're going, she's like, if I had my choice, I would go with her, because the whole bit is about how she emanates all this
right
sexy, fun, great, smart stuff that you'd want to be with her, and you'd never want to be with the character that Carrie Russell's playing.
Now, you got a family tie to this play, right?
My wife is directing it.
I'm a huge fan.
But it has nothing to do with I am being objective. I would never. In fact, it would be dangerous for me to bring up anything that she's working on because, if I say the wrong thing. But I'm genuinely being enthusiastic, and I don't think I want to talk about it too much. It's Neil's, gig to.
Yeah, push, no,
but
I'm looking forward to
seeing it. But when I see good stuff, I like to talk about it because I think the more good stuff there is, the more it's sort of generally good, and more people go to theater.
I'd like to go to theater more.
I don't think people go now because it's expensive. And it's boring most of the time.
Well, let's talk about the risk-taking that you were talking about in the 70s, because there's sort of like fragments of the performance art scene sort of left over downtown. There are people that come into this town now that do performance art, but now it doesn't really have the forum that it used to. And there used to be, it seems, when you started out, there was just a frenetic energy. There was wild risk-taking. Everybody wanted to be part of that scene down there. And it has money ruined this. Are people not willing to invest or take chances on that type of theater?
Well sadly, two things have happened.
Uh-huh.
And they would seem to have nothing to do with any of this, but they have a lot to do with it. Rent,
Okay. The expense of paying for your apartment changes the whole way it works. You can't be a bohemian if you've got to find $1,500 a month to pay for your share of the $3,000 a month apartment.
And if you're a bohemian who lives in Queens, your credibility is not what it should be.
But even then, you can't. I mean, it's too expensive everywhere.
Right.
I mean, I was paying $200 a month for a storefront in the Lower East Side, and so then I had lots of time to be like a crazy guy. Hang around my friends and drink and be stoned all the time.
Yeah.
And but also go and see each other's things and all that. That's one thing. The other thing is they have figured out in New York that they can make Mongo bucks with the theater. Because there are some really rich people in the city now, a huge, very rich middle class, upper middle class, who, when they want to do something special, they, you know, movies are too low grade for them now.
Right.
So $50, $100 for a ticket.
Night at the theater, no problem.
Chump change, man.
Oh, yeah, I went to see Kushner's musical, and that cost us like, you know, $150, $200 for two tickets.
You got to make, for us, we got to make a, I don't know if I'm really in the category of the average guy. I mean, I do pretty well, but it's not, it's still, I got to think about it. It's like, do I really want to spend, but there are people who don't have to think about it. You know, it's like, we're going to spend $200 for dinner, we're going to spend $50 for parking, we're going to spend a couple $100 for the tickets.
And it's not a problem. It's not a big thing. You know, it's funny you said rent because I was thinking gentrification at the same time you were saying rent, which is a byproduct. One's a byproduct of the other. The fact that, you know, there are very few places where people can nurture anything anymore without having to spend a huge bundle of money for performance space. I mean,
well, it's, then you don't get that looseness, which is just a bunch of community about a community.
Yeah.
In our day, you know, we had the Worcester Group down the street and all those fun guys down, Liz LeCompte and Willem and Spalding and all those guys are doing junk. And I was working around the kitchen and there was the Mud Club and there was all just stuff. And we weren't trying to get anybody into the neighborhood that we, this was for ourselves.
Right.
And we just, now that's happening in Brooklyn to some degree right now. I find myself out there more and more just going out to see what somebody might
be doing.
There's
some good stuff out there because, like, let me ask you a question.
A lot of places are kind of small. It's a pretty small place.
Well, I just read Bob Dylan's book, and you know, a lot of people forget that, you know, when Bob Dylan, at the time he was in the Village, it was like vaudeville. There were shows that went on during the day. There were dozens of guys doing the same thing. And you forget that, like, at any given point in time, like, I like to say, like, yeah, things are just crappy now. There's not as much talent as there is, as there used to be, because you kind of mythologize your generation or his generation. Mm-hmm. But there was a lot of crap then, too, yes?
I think there's always a lot of crap. You look back and you go, you only remember the good guys.
But so then,
you remember Bob Dylan, of all people, you know.
Right.
Well, then they were all geniuses like Bob Dylan. No.
Yeah, but
I mean, you would have gone and it would have been awful.
Right, but like in your day, because, you know, this was, you were in a seminal period of performance.
You trying to make it sound old or something?
In your day. Well, no, in that time, you were around when, you know,
I'm a Trivial Pursuit card from the 80s.
Really?
What Armenian performance artist in the 80s?
But I mean,
invented
you were
a solo performance and destroyed theater single-handedly.
Exactly. So yes. Like, who were some of the guys back then that you see around? They're like, oh, no, that's the guy that used to wear the hat. And I mean, there's got to be a few of those guys around.
I can't say who that is. There's some guys that, who died, and it was Brother Theodore who died. I'm sure you saw him there, and I
drowned it.
He was, you know, he's incredible. He goes back to Weimar theater or something.
Yeah.
There were a lot of weird things that you could go to see, and they had nothing to do with being commercial or anything.
Or things would come to see you.
Tripped out stuff. The jazz scene was like that, too. I mean, I remember going down to Studio Rivby on Bond Street, and it was like six people sitting there listening to the, you know, Sam Rivers.
To a genius,
wailing.
Right?
Yeah, a genius.
That always blows me away, where you go to this thing, and you're
that was New York for me.
There's four of you sitting there going, oh, my God, we're seeing something that's never going to happen again. It's the best it's ever going to be, and no one is witnessing it.
Yeah, you know what I saw as a kid? Not to interrupt you, but it made a very, very profound. You ever see The Living Theater?
Oh, Julian Beck.
Man.
I think the latter years of when they were, I think, selling weed out the back door.
Julian Beck and Judith Malina, who was in the Addams Family, ironically enough. And I think in the first Addams Family. But I mean, they used to do stuff. You know, you'd be standing on a corner someplace, and out they would, you know, they would just like appear out of nowhere, or they'd be in a corner of Tompkins Square Park on the Lower East Side. I mean, this stuff used to seem completely spontaneous. I don't know if it actually was, but I mean, you know, their theater was literally everywhere. It was unbelievable.
I didn't get hip to Julian Beck until actually I saw him in that movie when he was already dying of cancer. Wasn't he in the Poltergeist films or one of them where he played the weird sort of dead preacher?
Well, all those guys went and got
I can't remember what it was.
And Judith Malina was the in Dog Day Afternoon, she's the mom of the guy that's getting a sex change, and she's the one who gets on the phone with him and goes, "Why are you doing this? Why aren't you?" You know, and she's doing her New York mom.
And you got to work. You know what I mean? I mean, these people. You know, I mean, why wouldn't they want to be in films on some level? Peter Coyote's another guy, right?
Yeah, Peter Coyote was he was one of those what do you call it? The guys that were. What was the name? They were like in San Francisco.
Oh, yeah.
They took care of the diggers or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. We're going to come back with Eric Bogosian. Give us a call. You got questions for Eric. You want to voice something. Do something. 866-303-2270 is the number. We'll be back in a second. You're listening to Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition. We can't do it without you. Call us at 866-303-2270. That's 866-303-2270.
Right here on Air America Radio.
Past the hour, Mark Maron, that's Mark Riley. We're sitting with Eric Bogosian, whose new book, Wasted Beauty, comes out in May.
Yeah.
We're going to take a quick call here from, it looks like we got Ted in Nebraska. Hi, Ted, how are you?
Hi, Mark and Mark.
Hey.
Once again, you liberals are on there celebrating your degenerate art, completely out of touch with mainstream values, and you just sit there and spout on and on, and I guess you don't care.
Oh, no, I hate when it's, help me, Riley. Oh, my God, it's, oh, no, it's happening. My thoughts are starting to change. I'm becoming him. Oh, no.
Now, Pennsylvania.
And now, live from Radio Halliburton, it's Right and Early, the conservative's way to wake up with Mark the Shark Maron.
Good morning, neocon! It's 20 after the hour here on Radio Halliburton. Halliburton, the pipeline to freedom. Hey, W's been up in Canada. Here comes, oh, yeah, right up the Northwest Passage. Clean that up, Mountie. What's the matter, Canada? Too chicken to go to Iraq and fight with the real man?
Oh, no, I am a Canadian. I can't surrender. Can I surrender to you? I love John Kerry. I love Celine Dion.
I guess we should thank Canada for one thing, taking all the draft dodgers off our hands. Hey, wait, I think I see one now. Run, traitor, run. Woohoo! Ooh, direct hit. Gut him and throw him in the truck. Where's your affordable health care now, hippie? Wow, too many Molsons. Hey, speaking of hippies, the Supreme Court's going to rule on medical marijuana. What's the matter, liberals? Stone.
Oh, I have cancer and the chemo makes my tummy hurt. I need the Supreme Court to give me a bong hit.
Keep smoking the weed, liberal. It makes you an easy target. Whoa, killing pinkos gives Mark the Shark the munchies. Hey, it's 22 after the hour. Let's take a call. You're on the air, caller.
Tommy Pinko, liberals, New York.
Yeah, that's the KIA, caller. We should turn Canada into one big prison and throw our trash over the border. Put litter in its place. That's what I say. It's 24 after the hour, time for the neocon power weather forecast. Up in Canada, it's raining cowards. South of the border, the winds of freedom blow through every patriot. Oh, Dan Rather. Dan Rather, how'd you get in here? Go on, get out of here, traitor. All right. Stick around, neocons. We'll be back with Toby Keith.
Don't touch that dial, patriot. We'll be back with Right and Early.
Wow, what just happened, man? What happened?
Are you all right,
black out?
Are you okay?
I have one of those things?
I think you did, yeah. There's a contract just arrived from Fox. They want you.
Sorry, I have those weird fits. So, Eric Bogosian, still in the studio. I wanted to talk to you. We got some calls for you, but I want to talk to you about audiences. Because I remember seeing, I guess it was at the beginning of Sex, Drugs, and Rock and Roll, which I saw three times in different forms, as I was telling you. I saw it once up in Boston when you were workshopping it, and then I saw it here in New York, and you took out my favorite character, which you didn't even remember because I asked you on the break. You did a character of a guy just, basically the way I remembered it, he was sitting on the couch doing bong hits saying, "I'm an outlaw, man."
Yeah.
And that
well,
that
stuff gets changed around a... It gets changed around, and as I'm working on a show, sometimes it just doesn't gel, and then I move him to a different show.
Right.
And so that guy was too close to another guy that was in that show.
Okay.
There was a guy in that show who was talking about how
like the microwave ovens, man.
Yeah.
They're gonna like, you know, the TV set's gonna be watching you, man. If you do something that the TV set doesn't like, man, then it's gonna send a signal to the microwave oven. Door pops open, your ashes.
They're all working.
And it was all about microwave ovens and about we were being watched by Big Brother and everything. And that bit ended up being sex, drugs. But I held on to the outlaw and.
Yeah.
His name is Red.
Yeah.
And it's like, here, man, you like to party, dude? I like to party, too.
And Red ended up in Pounding Nails.
Oh, he did?
And he was another kind of side of me, rather than the paranoid side. He was sort of the side that does everything, screws everything, takes every drug, and does everything, a kind of character that I'm sort of... In fact, it was based on a guy who came up to me in a parking lot who saw me with a sex, drugs, rock and roll. And
yeah.
When I finished the bit, I had a sex, drugs, rock and roll show jacket on, and the guy goes, hey, man, you like sex, drugs, rock and roll?
Yeah.
My name's Red, Motor Captain, Hell's Angel.
Give me one of those jackets. And I was, like, quaking with fear, and I thought, this is a bit.
Yeah.
You know, here I am, some kind of badass, but this is the real badass.
Yeah.
And I grew up with guys like that, so I'm not...
They're always the guys that come up to you, too, after a show.
What's up, dude? Yeah, man, here. Take some of these.
Yeah.
Real good. These will wake you up.
I used to do that back in the 80s, and I wouldn't know where I was for a couple of days, and then I would like, that's a long, long time ago. Yeah. As you were pointing out earlier, I'm ancient.
No, you're not ancient. Yeah, that was
Howard Hughes.
You're not much older than me. Let's take a call for Eric Patrick in Westchester. How are you, Patrick?
Hey, Patrick.
Wait, no, that's John. How are you, John, in Massachusetts?
Ah.
Lynn, how are you, buddy?
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
Oh, listen, you know, years ago when I was at John Wayne, please. It freaks people out because I'm liberal.
Okay.
But anyway, years ago, Al Pacino, when he was nobody, I think he probably had done Panic in Needle Park at that point, did a thing called the Basic Training of Pablo Hummel.
Sure.
It was $7 for tickets, you know?
Yeah.
And then within a year or two, The Godfather came out, and suddenly now that he was back in the same play, it was like $42 for the same play with him.
Sure. How was it these both times?
Well, I never did see it. I didn't know who he was when it was $7, and then when I didn't know who he was, I couldn't afford it. So you know, it was like, why bother? You know.
All right.
I went to Eric, do that kind of thing.
Well, okay, well, we'll ask him. We're going to be up there, you know, John. We're going to be up in Somerville next Friday, December 10th, with a live broadcast from the Someday Cafe. So come on down with
that. Yeah, come hang with us, man.
So you want to ask Eric if he did that kind of stuff?
Yeah, you charge $42 a seat?
I think at times we charged a lot of money, and eventually I stopped. I mean, I'm not even doing live shows at the moment because it gets so expensive sometimes,
right.
Unless I find some hole in the ground to go and just goof around for a night, which is for my community, for New York, but I don't hit the road anymore. I don't do that thing. I mean, what you got is you got a limited number of seats. You got a movie star that people are willing to pay that kind of money to go see. And, you know, it's not like a movie where they're going to keep running the movie until everybody who wants to see the movie sees it. There's only going to be so many seats to see whoever it might be. Now, the public, and one of the things that's cool about working with Labyrinth down at the Public Theater is it won't be an expensive ticket, but you have to start, you know, planning ahead if you wanted to come and see that play down there. Again, it's the same thing. There's going to be only so many seats.
And sometimes it's really worth it, you know? I mean, it's like it's really good theater. There's nothing greater than that.
Yeah,
really?
I and my own wife was a great theater experience. I mean, I'm in the theater. I'll go to see a lot of different things, and I get in free a lot of the time because I'll get, you know, on some kind of list or something like that,
right.
Opening night or whatever. But, I mean, I don't know. It's an unsolvable problem. There'll always be theater, and there'll always be new kids, like, finding a loft or some hole in the ground.
The Fringe Festival is one. Do you ever go to the Fringe Festival?
Sure, I do. Yeah, and I love that. In fact, I go to see a lot of stuff that's in theaters in New York that are, like, you know, it's 40 seats, and
sure.
It's the other end of a loft, and it's a couple of lights hanging there, and I have more fun there than I have at a lot of other stuff.
You ever walk out?
I never walk out on theater. I never walk out because I do fall asleep sometimes. Sometimes I used to go to the Broadway and bring a crossword puzzle with me or something because some of those plays get to be
a little
obvious.
Yeah,
I'm like,
yeah.
I know where this is going. Let me see.
Yeah.
Two down.
When did your
Armenian performance artist from 1982?
Well, Eric, thank you for coming to hang out with us. You want to plug the book again? Let's do it.
Wasted Beauty is going to come out in May. The DVD's out now, which is
Wake Up, Smell the Coffee.
Yeah. Just, you know, go on ericbogosian.com or go on whatever, any kind of Google or whatever. And find my name and
performance artist from the 80s.
Buy it and your life will be changed.
There you go.
Better than Dr. Phil.
All right. Well, there's the facts coming in from the liberal, from the compound, up in the Streisand compound. Here's the liberal agenda for today. Write these down. One, encourage sending more troops to Iraq, but only if Bush's old National Guard unit has to go first. Two, point out the fact that based on the last census, at least two of Ocean's 12 are gay. Three, organize new Woodstock Festival for baby boomers to celebrate 3 days of peace, love, and comparing individual retirement accounts. Four, counter funding for more abstinence education by telling kids horror stories about being backed up. Five, today's phrase, just drop it into conversation. You know why we haven't heard from Cheney? Because he's dead, man. He died the last time he went into the hospital, man. No one's running this circus. Wake up, buddy. Nobody's running it.
So you're on your way out. Go to Giggles in Seattle. Tomorrow, yeah. Saturday. Tomorrow, special guest co-host, the Reverend Al Sharpton.
Wow. He'll
be with us from 6 to 9.
I'm going to be listening.
Eastern time. Have a good one, man.
You too.
Morning Sedition.